There is a bridge between the childhood, between childhood and young adulthood. Here at the Boise Unitarian Universalist Fellowship, we celebrate the journey over that bridge as a welcoming rite of passage. Today, five of our young people are crossing that bridge and journeying toward exciting adventures. We are on the other side, waiting with open hearts, ready to mentor and learn from them, because we all stand together on our values of love and compassion, reminding one another that we will be there for each other, even on the wildest ride. I've known and watched these young people for many years, and they are truly exceptional. We're all in for a treat. I need to let you guys know that in your order of service, the young people are listed in alphabetical order. They will be presenting in a different order than that, and they will be telling you who they are in case you don't know.
Good morning. My name is Kristen Racy, and let me begin by telling you a story I remember from my first day of school in England. Oh, great. Here it comes, I thought. I could feel the pressure building like that of a pop can ready to blow. I sneezed. I looked around, but only those nearest to me seemed to notice, yet they were all staring. Excuse me, I said quickly, hoping this polite phrase would rid me of their attention. However, this utterance seemed to garner even more fascination in me. It's pardon me, the girl next to me explained, her British accent pronounced in each syllable. But that doesn't matter, you're from America, she proclaimed to the excitement of all the staring students around us. That was the beginning of my first day at Stonewith Woodford Church of England Primary School. I was going into first grade there because my father had been given a job across the pond in Bristol. After being taught the proper term for excuse me on that first day in a royal blue uniform, I became a sponge for information, observing those around me. In truth, I was as much a source of information to them as they were to me. In a matter of a week or two, I spoke with a British accent and correctly used words such as tea, loo, and wellies. Over the course of my family's two-year stay, I made lasting friendships, traveled Europe, attended the Unitarian Church in Bristol, and the Church of England with my school, and got a head start in my education. Unitarian Universalism has brought me up through my childhood with key values and ideals I still try to enact within my daily life. Within the children's affirmation, it states, with an open mind and an open heart. Such is the mindset I try to keep throughout each day, looking upon new ideas and opportunities with what is hopefully an unbiased eye. Of the seven UU principles, the one that has influenced me the most is the last, respect for the interdependent web of all existence of which we are a part. This principle applies not only to human relations, but also to our relationship with the earth. My overseas cultural exposure, along with the vast experiences in religious education, has helped me become more observant and open-minded. I try again and again to put myself in others' shoes and to look at the world through their eyes. That first day of school experience ultimately compelled me to ask questions about people and societies throughout the world and has sparked my interest in psychology and sociology. I hope to build on these unique experiences in college and to pursue my goal of understanding the actions of diverse individuals and societies around the globe. As I've grown older and I've had the opportunity to travel to multiple countries, I realize just how important it is to maintain that first day of school, curiosity, and awareness of the world around us.
Okay, hello. I'm Avalon Owens. And I've been in competitive speech for 3 years, so I'm going to do one of my speeches for you today. It is an oratorical analysis, which means that I take a famous speech and I give parts of that speech, and then I also analyze what makes it powerful and important. I picked a really cool speech, and I really like it because it reflects my values and the values of this congregation, so I think you'll enjoy it. Many years ago, a young Jewish boy from a small town in the Carpathian Mountains woke up in a place of eternal infamy called Buchenwald. He was finally free, but there was no joy in his heart. He thought there never would be again. Liberated a day earlier by American soldiers, he remembers their rage at what they saw, And even if he lives to be a very old man, he will always be grateful to them for that rage. Though he could not understand their language, their eyes told him what he needed to know, that they too would remember. Elie Wiesel was only 16 years old when he was taken from his home and put into a Nazi concentration camp. Half a century later, after a lifetime defined by both terrible tragedies and great reversals of fortune, which left him a successful author, he was invited to speak at the White House. It was 1999, and his mission was to celebrate the new millennium, but more importantly, look back on everything the last century taught us. His final speech, titled "The Perils of Indifference," was so powerful that no one who heard it has ever forgotten. We are on the threshold of a new century, a new millennium. What will the legacy of this vanishing century be? Two world wars, countless civil wars, a senseless chain of assassinations, Gandhi, the Kennedys, Martin Luther King, bloodbaths in Cambodia and Nigeria, India and Pakistan, Ireland and Rwanda, Sarajevo and Kosovo, Auschwitz and Treblinka, Hiroshima and Nagasaki. So much violence, so much indifference. One of the greatest speaking techniques Wiesel uses is specificity. It's a lot harder to care about the powers of evil when they are something abstract, some sort of ominous, nebulous darkness hovering ominously in the background. Wiesel has experienced evil firsthand, and he knows that many of us have too, even if our scars aren't as visible or as deep. By naming specific incidences that many in his audience have lived through, Wiesel is able to bring up in everyone's mind images of concrete evil, and in doing so, capture our sympathies and attention for what he says next. What is indifference? Etymologically, the word means no difference, a strange and unnatural state in which the lines blur between light and darkness, crime and punishment, cruelty and compassion, good and evil. What are its courses and consequences? Is it a philosophy? Can there be a philosophy of indifference? Is it necessary at times simply to keep one's sanity, live normally, enjoy a fine meal and a glass of wine as the world around us experiences harrowing upheavals? In this section of his speech, Wiesel ends five of his six sentences with question marks, and he continues to ask things throughout the speech, proving his mastery of the rhetorical question. Most questions are meant to have answers, so even if no one down below is expected to actually jump up and say something, by asking questions of his audience, what is indifference? Wiesel is asking for involvement on our part. He wants us to try and find the answers. He wants us to think, not just sit there and hear. Wiesel continues. Of course, indifference can be tempting. More than that, seductive. It is so much easier to look away from victims. It is so much easier to avoid such rude interruptions to our work, our dreams, our hopes. It is, after all, awkward, troublesome to be involved in another person's pain and despair. Behind the black gates of Auschwitz, the most tragic of all prisoners were called the Musulmaner. Wrapped in their torn blankets, they would sit or lie on the ground, staring vacantly into space, unaware of who or where they were, strangers to their surroundings. They no longer felt pain, hunger, thirst. They feared nothing. They felt nothing. They were dead and did not know it. In this section of his speech, Wiesel completely destroys the argument that indifference can be comforting by submitting his own personal experience as evidence. Basically, by telling personal stories, he is able to reach out to the members of his audience and appeal to us on a person-to-person level. He is able to warn us that indifference is the lowest state of the human being, even equal to death, and his words make an impression because he knows he's been there. Wiesel goes on to say, in a way, to be indifferent to that suffering is what makes the human being inhuman. Indifference, after all, is more dangerous than anger or hatred. Anger can at times be creative. One writes a great poem, a great symphony. One does something special for the sake of humanity because one is angry at the injustice that one witnesses. But indifference is never creative. Even hatred at times may elicit a response. You fight it, you denounce it, you disarm it. Indifference elicits no response. Indifference is not a response. So far, Wiesel has greatly impacted his audience by interacting with us through specific imagery, rhetorical questions, and personal stories. We can all now agree that indifference is terrible. The only thing that's missing is some idea of how widespread this problem is. Wiesel answers this question near the end of his speech, and his answer becomes a powerful warning. Our only miserable consolation was that we believed that Auschwitz and Treblinka were closely guarded secrets, that the leaders of the free world did not know what was going on behind those black gates and barbed wire. If they knew, we thought, surely they would have moved heaven and earth to intervene. They would have spoken out with outrage and conviction. They would have bombed the railways leading to Birkenau. Just the railways. Just once. And now we knew, we learned, we discovered that the Pentagon knew. The State Department knew. The President knew. Wiesel tries to end his speech on a high note. And yet, my friends, good things have also happened in this traumatic century. The defeat of Nazism, the collapse of communism, the demise of apartheid. Does it mean that we've learned from the past? Does it mean that society has changed? Has the human being really become less indifferent and more human? Once again, Wiesel uses specificity, questions, stories, and personality to interact with his audience and move our hearts, proving that the greatest speeches don't happen by talking to people, but talking with them. The way he wrote his message and the way he delivered it were both so smart that it was impossible for this speech not to go down in history. And yet, perhaps the most powerful aspect of it was the message itself. Wiesel's warning was still relevant in 1999 because indifference still plagues every one of us, even the best of us. War, poverty, disease, and genocide affect millions around the globe today. And until all of us can look past our own lives long enough to do something about them, Wiesel's warning will still be needed. He ends his speech by tying everything back to the beginning and leaving the future for us to decide. And so, once again, I think of that young Jewish boy from the Carpathian Mountains. He has accompanied the old man I have become throughout these years of quest and struggle. And together we walk towards the new millennium, carried by profound fear and extraordinary hope.
Good morning. I'm Shauna Gettings. Hi. When I first stepped into this church 8 years ago, I was confused how this could even be considered a church. Unlike the Catholic churches where I attended before, I didn't hear any organ playing. I didn't see anyone kneeling to pray before Mass. There was no pews. I didn't see any stained glass windows symbolizing stations of the cross. And I noticed that the minister of this strange place was a woman. As a baptized Catholic, I attended Mass every Sunday. I read the children's Bible cover to cover, at least twice. And I had my first communion when I was 8. It took a while to get used to the differences that I encountered here, but in time, I grew more comfortable. When I was in 5th grade, at the RE class, we voted on what we wanted to learn about, and I thought that was really strange. I was surprised. Kids were offering different suggestions, such as Judaism, Buddhism, Christianity. And it was my turn to suggest something, and I just suggested Unitarianism. I didn't really get it. And they're like, okay. So we did, but I still was kind of confused at the end. The main point I got, though, was that Unitarians are very open-minded, and that was good enough. As I got older, it was time for my youth group to get more involved in the church. I participated in fundraisers for the trip to Boston in 2004. I took OWL with most of the same Boston bounders. I was in coming of age, delivered a faith statement, and I also got involved with the Senior High Dream Group. Because I was involved in these activities, I met and got to know quite a few adults, especially Judy Frederick, Sharice Davis, and Miriam Woido. Judy Frederick and Sharice Davis were the advisors for Dream Group. And to be in Dream Group, you have to have a lot of trust to be in this group and to share your dreams with them. And both these women offered that trust to me. I started looking forward to every other Wednesday, not just because Sharice never failed to bring Guido's pizza and Judy brought cookies, but because that room turned into a place where I became extremely comfortable opening up to a group of people and talking about the possible meanings of my dreams. Miriam Woido was my coming-of-age mentor, and even though that was 5 years ago, she still continues to check in with me every Sunday, and she still sends me birthday cards, which I think is really sweet. I have a lot of respect for these women because in order to get involved with any of these activities, you have to really care, and you have to be extremely compassionate. After attending this church for 8 years, I have come to understand what makes a church a church. It's not about whether the building has great stained glass windows or an organ playing. It's about knowing no matter whom you are, you will be loved and welcomed. I've never felt anything less here, and I'm proud I can say that about the Boise Unitarian Universalist Fellowship. Next year, I plan to attend Central Oregon Community College in Bend, Oregon. I'm not sure what I want to study, but I'm not too worried about that right now. I just see next year as an adventure away from home, which makes me nervous but kind of excited. As I make my way into the future, I hope to bring the qualities I have learned from this church with me. I now know how to have trusting relationships, respect for others' opinions, and most importantly, an open and patient mind. I am so grateful for Booth for teaching me so many important lessons.
Good morning. My name is William Smith, and hi. I would like to take this opportunity first to apologize for the out-of-tune note in that last piece. I'm sure all the musicians in the audience were cringing, as was I. But hopefully you're not sick of my playing, because I'm going to play another piece in a moment that I wrote especially for today. And what I did, I took some songs that I grew up with, also many of the adults in the audience grew up with, from the generation before mine. And I took lines out of those songs that were important to me and kind of meshed them all together. And hopefully you will all recognize them and maybe know the origins. We can play a little game. We can name that tune something. And it's just a sample of the music that has inspired me throughout my short life. In the span of time from middle school to high school, along with many of my peers, I relied on expression, particularly through music, to cope with the changes I was facing. Oh, Bowie humor. Freaky. Now that I've crossed the threshold into post-teenhood and pre-adulthood, I'm beginning to look at why expression and the arts are effective at consoling our human emotions. I look towards my university years with excitement and a passion for my subjects, music and psychology. The mysteries behind how the brain functions, particularly while interacting with music, fascinates me. How is it that a single note can cause seizures or rapture? What is the relationship between music and mental illness? What secrets of the mind and its melodies will we unlock next? Well, we all shine on like the moon, stars, and sun, and I hope someday you'll join us and the world will be as one, because a working class hero is still something to be. Now, a friend of the devil is a friend of mine, but don't think twice, because it's all right. Jesus is just all right with me. And so it was that later, as the miller told his tale, that her face at first just ghostly turned a whiter shade of pale. And ooh, baby, I love your way. Now, society, you're a crazy breed, and I hope you're not lonely without me. For the losers now, well, they'll be later to win. But how does it feel to be on your own, with no direction home, like a rolling stone? Obladi, oblada, life goes on. And the man at the back, he said, everyone attack. And it turned into a ballroom blitz. Ballroom blitz. Ballroom blitz. Well, she told me her name was Billie Jean, and I believed you, now it's up to me. She don't lie, she don't lie, she don't lie. Cocaine. Crawling on the planet's face, some insects called the human race, and she said, hey, sweetie, take a walk on the wild side. She said, do, 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 this is ourselves under pressure.
I'm Heather Smith. I'm kind of sick, so please bear with my voice. I know it's not the most pleasant thing to listen to right now, but I will try to speak up. I truly believe that it takes a village to raise a child, and this congregation has been a big part of my village. Every one of you, even those of you who are meeting me for the first time today, have contributed to who I am now by just being part of this accepting community. This place will always be a place of comfort in my heart, because it was here that doors were opened, new ideas exposed, and the foundation of my own beliefs began. When I first came to Booth, it wasn't at all what I had expected. I thought it was curious that people didn't dress up and that Bibles weren't decorating every chair. This is what I had established church meant for my peers. And it was odd to me that this congregation lacked that all seemed to be required in religion. I wondered why we celebrated different holidays, learned about sexual education at church, and discussed opinions and thoughts rather than God. I soon realized that all the differences of this place were what made it special. And what previously felt wrong to me now felt right. Here I know that I'm surrounded by hundreds of different beliefs and opinions. But instead of memorizing them, I'm encouraged to meld them together and create my own ideas and beliefs. I've learned that it is okay to have differing views, for they are what make our world interesting and alive. I've learned that acceptance is a powerful gift, and it must be given every day. I've developed strong morals, but I keep my mind open to new ideas, because I know that learning is the only way to grow and understand. The following poems are a reflection of my beliefs on religion and faith. They illustrate how my path of confusion has turned into a trail of beliefs that grows wider with every new experience. Religion. Going forward, what does it mean to me? A house in which I feel everyone is on the same page. An understanding that it is okay to believe what you choose. At my age, I can choose. What do I choose? I choose to believe that people are good, with good intentions. I choose to believe that spirits of people I care for watch over me, there to guide my actions and my thoughts by examples they've set for me. Beliefs. At my age, what do I believe? Not a man in the sky. God does not run my life with strings. I will not blame him for deaths. He did not take what I loved away from me, nor does he create life. My belief is that miracles, big and small, are created through love, hope, and faith. Love by caring about those around you and protecting what you hold dear. Faith in the living forces around you, in the good in all people, in truths and rights. Hope in tomorrow and what tomorrow may bring. My belief is that you lead your life and I will lead mine. I put my faith in the people surrounding me, that they will guide me through life, not by strings, but by love.
Okay, I was going to do this in a minute, but we can do it now. We don't just have applause in the service as a regular matter, of course, but when it's really, really, really special, we do. So let's have a very big, we'll bring the kids up in a minute for you to ask questions, but let's have a round of applause for them.
I just want to say that I am so impressed with all of you. It's just so heartwarming to feel that we have this kind of a group of people that are going to be growing up. And I credit the young people of America for showing the maturity to elect the president that we have elected. It was the young people that did it, and I never thought I'd see that maturity in this country. Thank you so much.
So I just wanted to address this to Heather particularly, and just to tell you that I've known you since before you were born, and I feel privileged to have known you for so long, and to wish you all the luck in the world. And as always, if you need anything, give me a call.
I would like to respond with something all of us in this room knows, and please join me. Amen. 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 Amen.
That seems like a good time to give them another round of applause, and thank you.